Get on Team Shaq with WynnBET. We're playing parlays, boosting odds, and laying the wildest prop bets. Don't miss another game. Download the WynnBET sports betting app today.
Sign up today and win $200 in free bets when you place a $10 first-time wager on a straight bet or parlay. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
Hello, Marlins fans, and welcome to another spring training episode of Swings and Mishes. I am your producer, Jeremy Taché, joined by Craig Mish, who I've actually gotten to finally see quite a lot of in person. You know, we do so much of this podcast, but we don't actually get to see each other so much, and gotten a chance to kind of hang out over at spring training, and we will continue to do so as the games are starting up this weekend on Saturday. First game against the St. Louis Cardinals at Roger Dean Stadium. So I guess sort of a home game for both teams in some ways. But Craig, what are you looking for as we're heading into spring training here as the Marlins are getting things started on the field for games? You know, they've been practicing now for about a week.
Yeah, if people want to find me, this is where you can find me this time of the year. Like, this is why you'll see me, because even unlike the regular season games, And I would say out of 81 home games, I don't know, I probably go to half. I think that's about fair. Maybe some more, maybe less, depending on the season. But with spring training, I am there every day. Yeah, mm-hmm. I am there a lot because I feel like there's a lot to learn this time of the year. And it's time to understand who the players are in each team and developing relationships, both not just with the Marlins, but with the other teams as well. So this is a very important time for me. And it's not really a time that I look at the results as opposed to just look at how players are being developed and how they're being used and what the lineups are and how pitchers are throwing and who's hurt and who's not. And so it's a very crucial time for me. And out of, you know, between February and to the end of March, I don't know that I'm there every day, but I'm certainly there, you know, a lot. I mean, percentages, I don't know, 75% of spring training, I'm there a lot. Yeah. I really enjoy it. And it's something that I recommend to a lot of people as well, even though they don't necessarily have maybe the access that I have, but it still does give you a face-to-face opportunity that you wouldn't normally get of going on a backfield somewhere and understanding who players are and what they could contribute. So high recommendation for me always has been on spring training. I'll be there Saturday. And then I'm like stealth. I just kind of go in and out to camps. It's like if I have the pass, I go in sometimes when I can, when I don't. Mm-hmm. So it's always TBD, and I do some interviews, not just for this, but for SiriusXM also. So I think that it'll be interesting to see, again, some of the young players. I think that for me, Victor Mesa is really the big key, because I just haven't seen nearly enough of him to make any kind of judgment. And to see him get into some big league spring training games is obviously going to be important. And then some of the players who I think that we'll see in June, and Harrison and Diaz and some of these kids who got a little bit of a cup of coffee last year in spring training, they're going to be on the big field and they're going to be facing off against really good teams. Just consider who they play their most games against: Houston Astros, St. Louis Cardinals, Washington Nationals, and New York Mets. So they're going to see a lot of those teams. And then for the first time in a long time this year, we're going to get to see the Philadelphia Phillies come south in spring training. They're going to make visits both to Palm Beach and Jupiter. I don't recall, as long as I've covered spring training, the Phillies coming here. So that's interesting, just to see a new uniform on the field there.
Right.
We get to see the Red Sox once. They'll play the Nationals in Palm Beach, so I'll be at that game. We get to see the Yankees a couple times, too. They do make the trip from Tampa. So we get not just the Marlins, but a chance to see just about all the teams in Grapefruit League action, the Braves as well. And the Marlins definitely could use some competition early. What do I expect? I expect the Marlins probably to have the best record in the Grapefruit League by the time that this is all said and done. I do, because this is a very competitive ownership, and it's very important for them to succeed. And I think that at least in a short sample of spring training games, I think that you'll see them put a very competitive product on the field, and I think they're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, I think the team is going to gain a lot of experience, especially those young guys you just mentioned. It will be interesting to see guys like Harrison and Diaz and Victor Mesa facing off against really good pitching as well. You know, you named all of those teams. Part of the reason those teams are so good is because they have such great frontline starters. So if some of those younger players do get a chance to face against those types of pitchers, it will be interesting to see the result. And, you know, obviously the record doesn't matter in spring training, but it's all about the production of some of those younger guys. And obviously there are some positional battles that are going to happen here as well that I know, you know, we've talked quite a bit on here how September and spring training are not really places to gauge statistics. So it's kind of breaking down how guys are facing, you know, having plate discipline and approach up at the bat, you know, talking about guys like Peter O'Brien and Garrett Cooper as they battle for, I guess, right field and first base and who knows where their playing time comes in. But O'Brien specifically was spoken about by Mike Hill at his press conference, actually, you know, saying that they do need some power in the lineup. I'm also very intrigued to see how Jorge Alfaro looks coming out the gate. Obviously, he finished off the season with the Phillies last year, and you know everybody is obsessed with him. I mean, they, the management, Don Mattingly, everybody is loving what they're seeing from Jorge Alfaro. So it will be interesting to see how he does at the major league level here in spring training. Are there any specific battles or players you're looking at as we go into spring training, or is this more just an overall group thing that you're looking forward to? Besides, obviously, those guys you mentioned that are going to come up in June. I'm talking more at the specifically at the major league level.
Yeah, I think that probably they go into spring saying that there's an open competition, but really they know more or less 20 of the 25 guys, I think, that are going to break camp. And I think that you can pencil in most of those guys. You know, there's a couple of things that I would say that I'm curious about and just things that I've learned, because naturally, if I'm going to be critical about something, I want to do my homework and I want to do my research on something to make sure that I understand what I'm saying. So there's two things that I think that we'll learn this spring training. I don't think anything that you see offensively from the Marlins is really going to mean all that much, because these guys are just going to see fastballs. Right. And then when we get to the regular season, we can get a better indication as to who is what. And I do think, by the way, offensively, even though we don't know who's going to start necessarily everywhere, I think you know the pieces that are going to be on this team. The pitching is definitely the strong point of this team, but it's also the most curious, because from a starting pitching rotation, I do think that there is a chance that there could be competition toward the end of spring training to see who ends up winning the fifth spot. And then the loser of that is going to have to go to AAA.
Right.
So there will have to be some judgment inevitably, but I don't think that will come, at least, Jeremy, for a month from now. So we're talking about getting through this week, next week, the week after that, and then Pablo Lopez and Garrett Richards and Wei-Yin Chen and Nider, those guys are going to have to all battle out for like one spot or two, and the other guy is not necessarily the loser in the competition. He's just going to have to go to AAA because there's just nowhere else to go. But the other thing that I would mention, and we'll talk to Adam Conley coming up here in a minute, is that, again, my concern is the bullpen for the Marlins, because I don't advocate them spending a lot of money, but I do advocate wanting to leave a game in 3 hours. And if they're down 3-1 in the seventh or eighth inning, are they bringing in someone who's going to give up 5 runs and I'm going to be stuck there for another hour? And that's not something that I want to see. That's no indictment of the Marlins. Their offense is not going to be great. So at least keep the games competitive from a pitching perspective. Don't put these guys in like you had last year with Tozawa. No disrespect to him. No disrespect to Meyer, who came in last year also and didn't get a lot of outs, didn't pitch well, hopefully has a better year. But those were guys last year that struggled when they were forced to be put in that situation. And, of course, Barraclough and some of the others too. But here's what I'm told. A couple of guys, and, you know, when I am yelling and screaming, you guys need to sign someone, here's what they've told me. They've told me that Nick Anderson is a guy that they like a lot. So I don't know a lot about him. I've seen his numbers. They're confident in him. They acquired him for a reason. And if I had to guess, barring something unforeseen, he will be part of this bullpen mix on opening day. They like him a lot. I keep hearing his name a lot. So he's a name that I've circled that I'm going to have to watch in spring training and see what they see that I don't see. And again, maybe fine. I don't know. But that's a name that they like a lot. Another name that they like a lot is Quijada, the left-handed pitcher who they've had, another name to circle, who I think is going to be on the 25-man roster, because if I keep hearing this guy's name, it means they must like him a lot. And then the third name that I think is a little bit more iffy, but I do think has a really good shot to be in the bullpen amongst the other names that you know. And let's be clear, the names that you know are Romo, Steckenrider, Conley, and Guerrero. I think beyond that, you still have four or five spots for other guys.
Right.
Austin Bryce, who is now back with the Marlins after being traded to the Reds, from what I was told, not only did they claim Bryce this past time when he was released by the Orioles, they tried to claim him even before the Orioles claimed him the last time. So that was something that I didn't know. They had so much interest in bringing him back when he was waived, I believe, by the Angels in November. The Marlins claimed him. They didn't get him, and I was told the Orioles did, of course, because they had the worst record in baseball.
Right.
Then the Orioles let him go, and the Marlins claimed him again. So this isn't just about the previous regime having him. It's about them really liking Austin Bryce. So he's another name, Jeremy, that I think is going to be in the bullpen. So I gave you the four names that I think I know, three right. names that I can almost guarantee, because if they're telling me over and over again that these guys are going to be good, they're going to be there. That's seven. And so we need to piece together a couple of other names. And so I know it's not sexy and it's not fun to talk about bullpen guys. But again, being at a ballpark in the eighth inning and having a close game and being blown up because of the bullpen is not something that anybody should have to endure. The Marlins have put their stake in these guys that they've acquired in the offseason and decided not to spend money that they do have because they have the money. They let Tozawa go. Ziegler retired. Volquez is gone. Mm-hmm. They got some dough to spend if they wanted to by getting another couple vets. They want to develop the young guys. If that is right, fine. I'll be the one to say it, but that's kind of where I'm at with the bullpen at this point.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the way they handle the pitching staff in general because, you know, questions were brought up when Romo came in of, you know, will you go with an opener? To which Mattingly basically said, I'll do anything to help the team win, which was his great way of not answering the question. We got a couple of conversations coming up here, one with Adam Conley, and I'm just wondering if you'd like to preview those so the Swings and Mishes fans listening can know what they're about to get into as we wrap this up.
Yeah, Adam Conley, always a very interesting conversation with him. He takes pitching very seriously. He's now one of the veterans on this team, but as he'll say in the interview, he's not a veteran to the bullpen. This is really his first full year out of the bullpen going into the season, knowing he's not going to be a starter. So pretty candid and honest conversation from him.
Wanted to ask you, kind of entering camp this year, it's always a different feel for you. This kind of camp, you're coming in, you know where your role is in terms of being a bullpen guy. And so what is your approach going into spring training?
This year is special for me because it's my first year in spring training ever as a reliever. There's been times where I've pitched out of the bullpen, sometimes in spring training or sometimes in the regular season. But this is the first time going into it. The preparation has been for the long haul to be pitching out of the bullpen. So I'm, as far as that side of it goes, I'm learning that as I go. But the good thing for me is that this transition's been good for really just – my body seems to respond well to that type of workload. So as far as keeping my weight up, keeping my strength up, and being able to really fine-tune mechanically what it is I want to do, this has been a role that's been helpful for me to improve in those areas and keep on improving.
It's interesting because you obviously came up as a starter and you had so much success last year as a reliever and even the year before. When you kind of project yourself out, you think back 5-6 years ago, did you think that this would maybe be some sort of end game for you over the course of your career?
When I first signed, I was told ultimately I would be a reliever when I was pitching in the big leagues for us. So that was kind of coming from there. And I also got told back then that I was going to start until I failed. And so I think there was some degree of it where I think that there was an edge on my part to prove people wrong and continue to be successful being a starter. I believe that I could have been a workhorse as a starter and done the things that were necessary ultimately. And now, as I was saying before, that I've transitioned to this, I look back on the experience that I gained as a starter, those innings that I threw, having to go through a lineup two or three times, especially on those days where my stuff wasn't especially good, gave me a lot of invaluable experience as far as pitching at this level. As a reliever, being able to fine-tune those things, and obviously mechanically getting older, more mature, knowing myself better, and have been able to actually perform better physically. A lot of that experience I attribute to that time that I was starting, and I'm just thankful for it.
One of the strange things when you were a starter, and I think it kind of corrected itself maybe a little bit last year and the year before, is you had some really wacky reverse splits where it was really easy for you to get righties out, less easy to get lefties out. it's kind of corrected itself, I think, a little bit. But why do you think that was back in the day? It was hard to project.
The breaking ball, you know. I think that the look of the slider that I did throw seemed to be more effective to righties after I had thrown fastballs into them. What we found when we looked at the data was that the slider that I was throwing before was actually, for all intent and purposes, was basically just going in a perfectly straight line. So my fastball and my changeup have very, very similar movement. They're just at different velocities. So when I pitch to righties and I pitch into them, I think that my slider, even for a ball, looks much more like my fastball in there. To a lefty, because the ball didn't actually go, it didn't actually break to the right. For me to get that ball in the corner, or for me to even try and sweep that ball away from lefties, really had to be a ball out of my hand. If it was a strike out of the hand, it stayed a strike because it was straight, and then that was a dangerous pitch for me. Basically, my fastball and my changeup running in under their hands, where the slider would kind of more or less just stay straight and kind of run into that fatter part of the barrel, kind of out over the plate. So I think without having the breaking ball, the good left-handed hitters were able to really just make the plate smaller on me. I really kind of became a guy who could really pitch to one side of the plate against lefties. So the angles of velo at times could sometimes be tough on left-handed hitters, but I didn't really have I don't think really as much of a mix. When you've got good left-handed hitters in the lineup every day, if you're facing the Charlie Blackmans of the world and the Bryce Harpers of the world, as soon as those hitters can start to eliminate some of those things off you, those at-bats get a lot tougher, even when you've got good stuff. So that's been a big thing for us, really, is mechanically and understanding how a breaking ball is actually thrown, and really trying to basically rewire my arm to be able to get into that position to throw that ball. And we've had, so far, we're really excited about the progress that I've made. And so I think that we're going to start seeing results of that labor and of that work of trying to really figure out what that is. I think that just pitching better in general and in the role that I've been in has allowed me in short stints, in one-time at-bats, to be successful against lefties, really even without the breaking ball this past year. I intend on having a better breaking ball now and hopefully just continue to improve in every area, really.
Right, but the results were much better last year. And not only that, but you go into this year where your manager, Don Mattingly, unlike years in the past, of not only with him managing the Marlins but managing the Dodgers too, he's always gone to one guy in the ninth inning. It's very clear this year that the opportunity is there, not just for you, but for Sergio Romo, who you acquired, Drew Steckenrider. So is that a role that you're looking forward to filling wherever they put you in? And I know the ninth inning is kind of like a special thing, I guess, for a lot of pitchers too, if you wouldn't mind expanding on that.
Yeah, I mean, I truly view my career as a professional out-getter, you know? So if that means that I was a starter, or I was a long guy, or I was the closer, if you wanted to give that title or whatever, I guess just fundamentally what I'm trying to do when I throw is throw the ball as perfect as I can, knowing that the results 60 feet away are going to be good, or at least within my control, going to be the best opportunity that I have for success. So really at this point in my career, at this point in my life, as I grow older, as I think about what motivates me to play these games and everything, I really think it's the pursuit of throwing the ball perfect at this point. And so I think that in a lot of ways can take an edge off of any type of pressure or expectation of what it is of who I am or what it is that I'm supposed to be doing. My pursuit is much more, it seems, 6 inches in front of my face and much more nose to the grindstone, and much more about what it is that I can provide for this team to be successful. At the end of the day, many of the results in this game are out of my control. There's always in every guy in this room a competitive side to us that without it you can't make it this far. But I think what really has been making me tick the last year or so has just been that pursuit to really throw the ball the best possible way that Adam Conley throws a baseball. And we've seen that as I've improved and as I've done that better, we've had a lot more success. So whatever it is that Don Mattingly feels is the most beneficial to this team as far as winning games and everything, then I'm all for it, because ultimately my priority is to throw the ball perfect and go out and help us win games and not to be the closer or to be done those things. So really at the end of the day, that takes a lot of pressure off me as far as success or failure in this game, the money and all the things that can get involved with this game. Really those things are insignificant to me. I really am just trying to focus on the work that I can do and take pride in doing that, and then be able to rest at night knowing that I did what I could to be the best version of myself possible.
Sure. On the outside looking in, we all do look at saves, though. It still is, and it has been. It's not as important as it used to be. I know that whenever they bring you in to get the most important outs, I know is important. The last thing for you is familiarity for, I think, on the outside looking in with a lot of the new names that are in this bullpen. Last year, you guys started off the season with Brad Ziegler, Tozawa, Kyle Barraclough. There's a lot of new names here. I don't know how familiar you've been able to get just in your pens or seeing the guys around, but to me, that's a little bit of I've made a point of concern. I'm just not sure who is there. So being that you actually are like the veteran here in this bullpen, what have you seen? What can we expect maybe from some of the other guys?
Well, first, let me say to your last statement, I'd love to say 50 games. Okay, so don't misunderstand me that I think those things are awesome, and I think those are great accomplishments when you can achieve those types of things in the game. As far as the bullpen that we've got, I feel like I'm kind of running along with these guys, being new to the pen. I threw about 50-something innings out of the pen full-time last year. I threw maybe just a handful of times out of the bullpen before that. Like, as I said before, I'd always been told that the goal for me, the projection for me, all those things was to be as a starter. So a lot of that's changed for me. The names that you mentioned, some of the, you know, Bearclaw, Steckenrider, who's been in the pen as a professional his whole career. Those are the types of guys that, honestly, I'm trying to pick their brain. I'm trying to figure out from those guys how it is that they go about their business. You know, Nick Wittgren last year, just guys who had been relievers for over the years, you know, asking those guys, how do you lift? You know, when do you lift? You know, what seems to work for you on your flat ground days? And when do you get on the mound? And how many days have to go by before you feel like you got to get back on the mound? And ultimately, I have to have my own signature on that, and I'll do it my own way. But just trying to glean from these guys the experience that they have. Ziegler was another guy who was my throwing partner, you know, for most of that year until he got traded there in the middle. So, you know, I feel very confident and very excited about the work that I'm doing as far as an individual goes, from a team standpoint and from a preparation standpoint. I mean, I'm truly leaning on guys like Dean Traynor and Stotts now that he's here, and some of these other guys who had been in the pen, and really just feel, you know, really, I guess, just joyful to be running, feeling like I'm running alongside these guys. I know that a lot's changed, and me and two or three other guys, you know, have been in the Marlins organization through a lot of it and have been here for a long time. But the exciting thing for me is that this year feels new to me. This year doesn't feel stagnant or unfamiliar, you know, too familiar or too commonplace. I'm excited. I'm excited about what I'm doing and doing it with this group of guys and learning from them, and hopefully having something that they can pick up from me and learn from me.
And of course, with March Madness getting underway in a month from now, it's a great time to get involved in the NCAA tournament and the NBA by going over to betdsi.com and using promo code SWINGS101. Your first deposit will be matched up to $2,500. Look, in this country now, as you know, everybody's betting on sports, and the tournament is probably the most fun thing to bet on. It's less than a month away. But right now you have the NBA going on. Of course, the American Alliance of Football is going on too. BetDSI.com has lines and spreads on all of those games as well. Don't forget to use promo code SWINGS101 when you sign up. Autographs are a really popular thing, if you guys haven't heard. Everyone's collecting them. Everyone is chasing them. And spring training is a great time to do it. But what do you do once you have the autograph, or your son or your daughter gets the autograph? What do you do with it? How do you save it? How do you preserve it? Well, Jimmy Spence is going to join us here on Swings and Mishes and tell you exactly what to do. And it always is an interesting conversation, I think, to talk about fans and to talk about autographs and to talk about what to do with them once you get them. Because as a lot of Marlins fans know, wow, like, this is an opportunity of a lifetime to go to spring training this year, not only to meet a lot of these young kids, but you have Don Mattingly in camp. He's the manager. You have Jorge Posada. He's a special advisor. You have Derek Jeter. He is the owner. And not just those guys, but, of course, everywhere in Florida, it's a great time to take your kids, run around, meet some players, take some selfies, get some autographs. And I've known Jimmy Spence for 20 years, and I, as a young kid, had a tremendous autograph collection and have visited with him many times to kind of go over what I have and what it's worth and help me, you know, decide what to put on the wall, what to put away. And I think that this will be a good conversation for a lot of people also to learn. And, of course, he's manages the office and is a director in South Florida. They have an office in Fort Lauderdale. And SpenceLOA.com is the website that you can go to learn how you can get your autographs authenticated and proven to be real. And Jimmy's with us now here on Swings and Mishes. Jimmy, good morning. Thank you for doing this.
Good morning, Craig. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. And I mean, I can't believe it's been so long since we've known each other. I get to see you every year. You're right at Marlins Fan Fest, helping fans out, getting their autographs authenticated. And I guess from your perspective, is this like the hottest time of the year for fans and for autograph collectors? Because baseball always seems to be the original autograph collector. Like, that's kind of where it started many, many years ago. And I know football's really taken on a life of its own, but I feel like spring training, because the players are more available, is like the hot time. Is that what you kind of see also?
Yes. Yeah. Baseball during spring training is where most of the autographs are signed throughout the year. So this is, you know, February, March, more autographs are being signed right now at any sports venue for the rest of the year. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I think, you know, the reason why baseball is just so accessible, and it has a lot to do with, you know, you're able to see the athlete, you know, without his helmet, without the helmet off. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that definitely makes it a lot easier to identify, you know, anybody on the roster, get their autograph, whether you're working on a team ball or a single sign baseball or trying to collect, you know, every player. You're able to identify them a lot easier than other sports.
And what Jimmy also does is authenticates the items. And so for people who don't understand what that means, is that if you have a collection of a Mickey Mantle or a Joe DiMaggio or a Hank Aaron or any player that's played in any sport, Jimmy understands what those autographs are and can tell you whether or not they're real or not. He and his family have been in business doing this for, I believe it's, is it been 30 or 40 years doing this? How long have you been at this?
Well, my father launched autograph authentication back in 1999. There was no such thing as, you know, you bringing your autograph to an authenticator and trying to figure out, well, was this the wife that signed this? Or, you know, is this an auto pen, or is this some kind of secretarial signature? Because, you know, a lot of the times, people would obtain autographs through the mail. So they would have absolutely no idea if, you know, the item that they received back was real. And sometimes, you know, certain athletes would surprise you. For instance, Roger Maris would routinely sign his mail until the time of his death in 1985.
Yeah, not one that I have, unfortunately. Nothing in my collection. My dad did that a lot. And so, as you know, I brought those to you to tell me what is real, what is not. And unfortunately, a lot of the stuff was signed secretarial, but I was able to, and still do have some of that stuff framed. And he's given me all that, including you guys authenticated Jackie Robinson for me many, many years ago. So, Jimmy, what would you recommend for people who are doing this in spring training? Because I think that what happens, I think, for most novice people, and it's understandable, because with my son, when I do this, and he's got his book of cards that he does, and then after it's done, we put them into a folder and he opens it up and he likes to look at them. But I think a lot of people, they go to spring training and they'll get a Derek Jeter, or they'll go on the Cardinals side and they'll get a Paul Goldschmidt, and then they just kind of throw it in the back of the car and forget about it, and then they want to look at it a year later and the sun got to it and it's all done. So it's like, what do you do with these things to make sure that in 20 years from now, they could visit you, get it authenticated, and then, you know, where does it go? You know, what do you do with it to make sure it's safe?
Yeah, preserving your autographs are definitely a must if you want to keep the value of that autograph. For instance, if you were to get a Derek Jeter, for one, make sure you invest in the right pen. A Bic ballpoint seems to be the best pen out on the market. And as cheap as it is, you know, that ink lasts as long as you know, as a very expensive pen that you can buy. So yeah, definitely invest in the right pen. Aesthetically speaking, blue looks very good on baseballs in comparison to black. We've just known that as just a hobby favorite. Blue signatures tend to sell for more than something signed in black ink. If you're trying to get somebody like Derek Jeter or Jorge Posada, try and get a hold of a Rawlings official Major League Baseball, and not a cheaper ball that you would buy at Walmart, like an official league ball. Mm-hmm. As far as preserving them, you said it, Craig, you got to keep it out of sunlight. Sunlight will only deteriorate your autographs. And I know a lot of collectors like to display their autographs in their man caves and, you know, have them prominently displayed, but invest in some kind of film that goes over a window if that's, you know, if it's being exposed to sunlight. Always close your blinds, you know, if you're out, and definitely keep your autographs out of in a controlled environment, away from moisture. Moisture definitely affects signatures and the paper it's on, or even the baseballs I've seen.
Yeah, it's really good advice, Jimmy. And, you know, the other good advice is, and I understand that there's people that do this for a living. They do this as their business, and we see them all the time as autograph collectors. And, you know, honestly, like, they get made fun of. I just don't have a huge problem with it. If somebody's willing to sign an autograph, I could care less what anybody's doing with it. But the reality is, and here is kind of where the dicey part jumps in, is that, you know, some collectors, what they do is they'll literally set up shop at some of these spring training areas and sell their stuff, like, right away to you. And sometimes that could work to your benefit, because if you don't get the autograph, you can get it. But if you haven't seen this person get the autograph, that's when the questions start to come in. And there are going to be collectors all over Florida and Arizona over the next month seeing some of the legends of the game. Ricky Henderson, sometimes Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, we're talking about the best players ever play. Hank Aaron is sometimes at Braves camp too. And so without your trained eye, how are you supposed to believe that anything that somebody's offering you is real?
Pay with a credit card. Hopefully they have a little swiper there for you so you can issue a chargeback. Now, I would, you know, you'll routinely see the same chasers on the field getting autographs. And then, like you said, you know, this is a business for them. So they'll try and sell them, or they'll try to trade them with, you know, another chaser. But, you know, as I said in the beginning of our conversation, more autographs are signed during this period of time. Well, there's also more forgeries being created during this time. And they're very sophisticated. These forgers get better and better every year. Craig, I've shown you a few Derek Jeter examples where, you know, we've deemed these autographs forgeries, and they're incredible. I mean, they're artists. Sometimes we can pick who that artist is. Sometimes, you know, it's a little bit of a clouded area. But my suggestion would be to, you know, become friends with some of the local chasers, guys that have been doing it for a long period of time. And ask them questions and say, you know, I'm about to trade with this guy. He's got a Derek Jeter ball, and I've got a Jorge Posada bat. I just want to make sure that, you know, he's got a good reputation out here. They'll be able to tell you who to avoid and who you can totally trust. There's a lot of good people in this industry, and unfortunately, you know, within that grouping, there are a couple bad eggs, and you know, everybody needs to help out each other. And we're never going to get rid of all the forgeries, but it's our job to, you know, detect these new sophisticated forgeries from entering the market and being sold for the same value as the ones that we authenticate. It only brings the value of autographs down when there's a surplus of that certain autograph.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago, and the Marlins changed the way that they had their gate. They used to have, you know, people could walk up all the way almost to the security gate, and that's where Ichiro would set up shop. And then these people would come out of there with their Ichiro autographs, and I'd look at it and go, how could anybody tell that this is Ichiro? I mean, the guy just, you know, put lines up and down, and that's where you guys have to come into play and determine if those things are real or not. Jimmy, one last thing here, and then we'll tell people how they can get over to your office in Fort Lauderdale if they have any kind of memorabilia from the past, especially historical stuff. I know that that's one of your specialties. Is I always love to hear your fun stories about something that somebody brought to you saying it was real, but it actually was fake, and like kind of the fight that you have to have with this person because you're the expert and they're not. And then you have to like almost be, you know, put the light over their face and be an investigator. Where did you get this? Are you sure? And then they're fighting you. No, it's gotta be real. It's gotta be real. Like, I love those kind of stories. So if any recent ones or any good ones that you could share, cause I always love to hear those.
Oh, there's so many times. And we know how to handle ourselves in those situations. We study the stuff where we even know the dating of certain helmets and baseballs, when these pieces were manufactured. So that gives us a lot of information before the person can tell us the provenance. One instance I remember is a Joe Namath signed full-size helmet that a gentleman brought into one of the appearances down here. And he had told me that he got it signed in the early 90s. And the autograph was a complete mess. I mean, it failed our authentication miserably. And he went into this elaborate story on how he met Joe in Jupiter, and how he went to his house and how he had like a cup of coffee with him. And, you know, I had done all the research on this thing before this guy was telling me this story. And he was very, very indignant about getting this thing in person. And I said, well, you know, you mentioned that you got this signed in the early 90s. Well, just looking in the helmet, and a lot of the newer helmets have a date when the helmet was manufactured. It's very easy to tell. Mm-hmm. It's right on the strap. And the helmet was manufactured in 2016. So I quickly shut him down on that. And, you know, he went off to say it was, he must have got it confused with another helmet, this and that. So we always, you know, at times, I shouldn't say always, we'll have people that come in trying to fool us because they know if they have JSA backing up their autograph, they can sell it for that maximum value. People trust our opinion. We've been in the been in this business for close to 15 years now. Now I've known you for over 20, Craig, and
a long time.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting, and I've got plenty more stories for our next podcast.
I do. And listen, thank you so much for coming on. I know that I've used you guys and your dad for, I mean, it feels like 20 years here, going on all my stuff, and as a young collector, I just never knew what my stuff was worth, and my dad never knew what his stuff was worth with all the celebrities and through the mail things that he did as well. And now my son is carrying the torch here for spring training. So it was good to see you the other day at Marlins Fan Fest. And for people, Jimmy, who are interested in your services, SpenceLOA.com is the website. Is there anything else you want to tag on here to the end for people who want to authenticate their stuff?
Yeah, you can follow us on social media. It's at JSALOA. We post all of our upcoming events. We're throughout the country into Canada. We're going to take a trip over to London soon. But Craig, I really appreciate you having us on. And any questions, you guys, you're more than welcome to communicate with us through email or social media. We'd be more than happy to answer.
All right. Thanks again, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Craig.
Do you ever feel like you're always on, your phone is blowing up with notifications, you have commitments to friends and family, and not to mention work? Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. It's a crisp and refreshing beer that even tells you it's cold when the mountains on the bottles and cans turn blue. When I need to hit reset, I grab a Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to coorslight.com/bluewire. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.